There is a pair of exciting exhibits at the Hyde Collection in Glens Falls, New York. Ansel Adams' early works and photo secession, painterly masterworks of turn-of-the-century photography are on display through April 20th in the Wood Gallery at the Hyde. Ansel Adams' early works offers a fresh look at key images by Adams from the 1920s through the 1950s. Photo Secession, painterly masterworks of turn-of-the-century photography, features masterworks from an international circle of painterly photographers known as the Photo Secession. We will also, this morning, hear about the Winter Light exhibit. And to accomplish all of this, we welcome Hyde Collection Director Charles Guerin and Chief Curator Aaron Coe. Welcome to the program. Thank you very much for being with us. A delight to have you all here.
Good morning. It's nice to be here.
Great to be here.
Well, let us start with how all of this came together. You had an incredible summer last year with the Georgia O'Keeffe exhibit, and now Ansel Adams isn't a bad way to follow up.
Exactly. We were very excited when the opportunity came to us to follow the O'Keeffe show so quickly with a major artist such as Ansel Adams. So it was a really wonderful opportunity.
How did it come to be, Aaron?
Well, it goes back to an exhibition we had at the Hyde in 2006, Edward Weston, Life Work. And that exhibition of about 100 photographs by Edward Weston came to the Hyde on loan from a major photo collector, Michael Mattis, and his wife, Judy Hochberg. And in the years since the Weston show, we've kept in touch with them. And Michael and Judy have now sharing their Ansel Adams treasures in this exhibition devoted to 40 of his early works. In addition, the Photo Secession exhibition, the Painterly Masterworks, is also drawn from Michael and Judy's extensive photography collection.
In putting it all together, I had a lovely day yesterday. I went through the museum and had a wonderful time seeing all of this great stuff and seeing the exhibit. You start out the exhibit by going through Ansel Adams and the early works. And what's fascinating to me is that you can, obviously you can tell it is early work, but so much of it is the foundation and even the core of what he became famous for.
Yes, exactly. In the exhibition is devoted to his early work, and in that early work, you can see the seeds of what would become Ansel Adams's grand and accessible vision in these early prints from the 1920s, 30s, and 40s.
And this is equipment-wise of what he's dealing with, and even subject-wise.
He's dealing with Yosemite, really. I mean, Ansel Adams becomes a photographer in Yosemite, and by hiking initially, he begins by joining the Sierra Club and going on these hiking expeditions in the High Sierra. As a young boy, he first comes to the park in 1916. And he brings along his brownie box camera that his parents gave him. And initially, he's taking photographs that document his hiking excursions that he can share with the fellow Sierra Club members. And his early prints were published in the Sierra Club Bulletin. And it's not until 1927 when Albert Bender, the San Francisco philanthropist and art patron, encourages the young Adams to think about his work as a photographic project, and to think about himself as a photographer, remembering that Ansel Adams actually also began out as a pianist. As a young man, he was torn between a career as a concert pianist and as a photographer. So in 1927, what we feature in this exhibition is the Parmelian print portfolio, which is Ansel Adams' first portfolio, his first major photographic statement that launched his career.
And some of those are smaller in size, but very interesting to look at nonetheless, because they and we see them sort of grow as we walk through the exhibit and the years go on.
Exactly. I mean, many of the early prints are contact prints because he was photographing with an 8x10 view camera. And the printing is actually direct contact. And so when you look at those prints, you see a level of detail that you don't get with even, 2 1/4, 3 1/4, which is often what what photographers use. It's a little bit more nimble in the field than an 8x10 view camera. But he was committed to that format early on and resulted in these truly magnificent prints, which later then he even blew up to much larger prints, and we'll have several of those in exhibitions coming up soon. And so you'll be able to see that enormous quality that he's capable of through that equipment that he was using.
There is a part of the exhibit that looks just at his work with trees, again, nature, Sierra Club, all of this coming together. And I think it's the first image on that wall of the trees. Mm-hmm. The birch trees is absolutely beautiful.
The aspens.
The aspens, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Northern New Mexico.
Gorgeous, right. Absolutely, yeah. Gorgeous. And that's where that becomes almost what we would think of as his signature work.
Yes, the trees are certainly considered some of his masterpieces and his signature works, as are many of the landscapes too.
Yeah.
We also have as Charlie mentioned, there's the vintage original early contact print of Half Dome, and then next to it, you probably saw, Joe, is an enlarged Half Dome image from the 40s showing how he's starting to experiment with enlarging the prints by the 1940s. But there's also other classic Ansel Adams. There's the Moonrise over Hernandez, New Mexico.
I love that.
Which is, yeah. Yes, another
icon. I love that. You use
icon.
That as sort of the feature.
Right,
yeah.
The featured image. And then there is the Storm Cloud over Yosemite. So there's a lot of masterworks by Adams in this one exhibition.
You know what I find fascinating about the, what is it called, Moon Over... What is it
Moonrise called? Over Hernandez.
That in having spent a lot of time in New Mexico, that really hasn't changed much. You look at a town, mm. but that's pretty
exactly.
much how it looks,
yeah,
and I love
looks.
That.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
that is so cool.
Yeah, he was able to capture the essence of a place, I think, beyond a period of time.
And it's while in the trees or even looking at Yosemite or of a mountain, it is very specific, and that is so broad in scope, and there's so much going on, which is your focal point can be all over the place
yes.
in that particular work.
Exactly. And Moonrise is one of his most popular. I think he made around 1,200 or 1,300 prints just from that one negative. What we have in the exhibition is one of the earliest from 1941. So it's a great way to see his early work and to see the subtleties and the tonal gradations that I think in some of the later work gets lost.
So let's talk about how this, as you walk through that exhibit and then you are filtered into the Photo Secession exhibit, Painterly Masterworks of Turn of the Century Photography. So what link do you want us to make?
Well, I think what our idea was we would introduce visitors with an icon, a giant of 20th century photography like Ansel Adams. But then with the Photo Secession show, which features 73 photographs by 26 artists, we're able to give visitors a sort of immersion into a major moment in the history of photography, a formative turning point, if you will, in the history of photography. Because this is a moment when, with the Photo Secession, around the figure of Alfred Stieglitz in New York City develops as a fine art form. And it's a very critical moment, again, in photographic history where photography is born as fine art and no longer seen just as a mechanical art. It becomes a medium in its own right.
And much of this, there is a good deal of portrait photography.
Yes.
In the exhibit?
Yes. So what you have with the Photo Secession is you have a combination of portrait photography, landscape photography, there's still life, there's architecture, there's botanicals. So it deals with a broad spectrum of subject matter that you would typically think of as belonging to painting, you know, for example. So it shows how these photographers at the turn of the century were trying to elevate photography as a fine art by drawing from the sort of treasured subject matters that have long been associated with art, but using photography to achieve those same similar aims.
And in a wide range, even with individual artists. So you look at one artist who would do a number of different things, landscape, portrait.
Yes.
They would experiment.
Right, exactly. So we have some of the major figures in the photo secession movement. I mentioned Stieglitz. There's Edward Steichen, Paul Strand, and Casimir Kuhn, Brigman, and many others. Clarence White, for example, another major figure in photo secession movement and in pictorialism. So pictorialism, that photography movement is also part of the photo secession story.
Yeah.
Because part of making photography fine art, these photographers that I've just mentioned initially wanted a photograph to look like a painting or a picture. So hence the term pictorialism. Yeah. So you're talking about soft focus, using soft focus lenses and sort of fuzzy, hazy edges to give a sense of atmosphere, to give a certain mood.
That's a term that you use in the exhibit.
Exactly.
In the notes, a lot of soft focus.
They were very engaged in experimentation, just as other artists who were working in other medias were exploring, well, how can I make an oil painting different by manipulating material in a different way or applying it in a different way? These artists were really taking photography to the next level. They were not only doing very interesting things at the moment, they were capturing the image with the camera, but then they were doing a lot of manipulation in the darkroom that was really purely for artistic reasons. They were playing with different kinds of paper, different kinds of mediums, not just silver halides, but platinum prints and other forms of prints. Mm-hmm. And so they were stretching and discovering and in many cases creating the new media of fine art photography, as well as the new image. And you putting those two things with their intent and their experimentation in the media created really the beginnings of what we consider to be artists who use photography as opposed to photographers who are looked at later on and think, well, that's pretty artistic. Mm. These folks thought of themselves as artists before they thought of themselves as photographers.
Steichen's work is beautiful.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, really gorgeous. Let us talk about the Winter White exhibit, which is the other exhibit that you have on display, and it is selections from the collection of Thomas Clark, and as the title would indicate, is winter scenes, and certainly we have enough of those.
We have a lot of winter, right?
our daily lives, but you can. It was fun yesterday to walk through the snow and go see paintings of more snow.
Well, I think the paintings offer us a whole nother perspective on winter that we may not even get just driving down the Northway or even venturing up into the Adirondacks or in our everyday life dealing with snow. I mean, this is looking at a moment in landscape painting at the turn of the century and in the early 20th century, artists who were looking to winter as a vehicle to express something poetic about the landscape, to express a certain quietude, a stillness that was very, in a way, at odds with the modern world that these artists were living in at the dawn of the 20th century. So what happens is winter landscapes become a very popular genre or subject matter within American Impressionist landscape paintings. So this exhibition provides us with an opportunity to really hone in or focus on that subject and ask questions like why? Why did all of a sudden winter become the favored season? The harshest season became a favorite season of these American Impressionist painters.
Mm. And when you look at them, because the styles are all over the board, right?
Yes. Well, you have some paintings that are more, what I would say, sort of a more classical impressionist style. Then you have others that blend impressionism with realism.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, so yes, the stylistically, it is a broad range that you see on view in the 20 paintings in the gallery. And it speaks to, I think, what's going on in landscape painting in the early 20th century, where artists are, following their own vision, following their own voice. And in some cases, they're tied with an art colony or a school. For example, you saw, Joe, yesterday, many of the Woodstock painters are featured in the gallery. And they reveled in a lot of purple. You know, sometimes they're referred to as the purple painters. So you also see that going on in the gallery where you see certain schools of artists and colonies of artists also sort of embracing a certain aesthetic. and then working in that style.
And with that said, is that, I mean, obviously it's when I was looking at these paintings, one of the things that I was curious about, and sometimes you could tell and sometimes you couldn't, as to where they were painting. Like, so are we mostly talking about the Northeast?
Yes. In this exhibition, yes. We're looking at scenes from, as I said, Woodstock, New York. We're looking at scenes from New Hampshire, Vermont, and Bronxville, New York.
This is why it all
looks
so familiar.
The Hobart Nichols. Yes.
This is why it all looks so familiar.
And Connecticut. Litchfield Hills of Connecticut are also featured in the exhibition. Every nook and cranny of the Northeast is represented in Winter Light.
So what has it been like? I mentioned the incredible Georgia O'Keeffe exhibit that you had in the summer, which just got rave reviews and worldwide acclaim. It recently opened in San Francisco and continuing to get wonderful reviews. And really, the Hyde is still in the news, which is wonderful.
Yeah.
How are you? You're still very much connected with that exhibit, I assume.
Absolutely, yeah. We're the originating institution, and so it's our job not only to continue to contribute to that. Erin just gave lectures in San Francisco, just as she did when it was on exhibition here. But then when the exhibition is over, it'll be our responsibility to make certain that all of those pieces get back to the original lenders in good shape and on time and to close out the exhibition. So it has been an entirely Hyde Collection enterprise from the beginning.
And is it hard to, and I don't know if you think like this, I would think you do, but I don't know. Is it hard to like top something like that?
Well, I think it is difficult. I mean, Georgia O'Keeffe is a remarkable figure in that she is so well known. And because the work is very accessible, she's very well liked as well as well known. And so perhaps that exhibition was a perfect storm in some ways.
Yeah.
But in other ways,
because you also have the local connection.
Yes,
I mean,
yes,
you bring it into,
exactly.
Like,
the
if
fact
not
that
you,
it was,
who's going to do it?
Right. That's right. Right. The fact that it was original research on an artist who, you know, nobody's done any original research in a long time on. So that made it very special. But there are a lot of artists, and there's a lot of wonderful work, both by living and deceased artists. And so what our interest is to continually show the best of what we can find and the artists that we think will be most appealing and interesting to our audiences.
So what's coming up?
Well, this summer we have a major showing of the Larry Kagan, an artist we all know well. He lives in Troy, New York, and teaches at RPI. Mm-hmm. So we are showing about 24 of Larry's sculptures. His shadow sculptures will be featured in the Wood Gallery. And the exhibition is called Larry Kagan, Lying Shadows. And that opens on June 15th. And as a complement to Larry Kagan's exhibition, in the smaller gallery, we're going to have an exhibition called Emerging from the Shadows, Edward Hopper and His Contemporaries. And that show is designed to look at the shadow as a motif in art that grounds or foregrounds Larry's work. You know, because shadows have always been a motif that have engaged artists over time. I mean, it was the shadow that I think, in a way, launched the Impressionist movement, where Impressionist painters start looking at shadows and seeing all the prismatic colors in shadows. So we're looking at Hopper as sort of one of the key figures in the use of shadows to convey a mood or to carry a narrative dimension in his work. And then we're going to fill it out with works by his contemporaries from the 20s and 1930s. And in a similar way that Larry Kagan uses in his sculpture, his shadow sculptures, where the shadow carries a sort of narrative burden and the shadow becomes a primary vehicle of the work of art rather than the sculptural object itself.
Mm-hmm. How many works from Hopper will you have?
We'll have about 24 in the Hoops Gallery, and as I said, about 24, 25 sculptures in the Wood Gallery for the Larry Kagan show.
So that's a great name. That'll bring people in too.
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, some wonderful stuff, and great programs coming up. Anything you want to mention that's immediate? Okay. Well, if you want to say, just check on the website, that's fine.
That's the best way.
Yeah,
okay,
best
that
place is the best to find way. Out is for all our educational programs and upcoming events and lectures, the best place to go is to check out the Hyde's website, www.hydecollection.org.
Hydecollection.org, mm-hmm. Hydecollection.org. We also have a lot of information on our website as well, which is wamc.org/roundtable, wamc.org/roundtable. And while we missed it yesterday, but you've got the second Sunday of every month is free?
Yes.
For families? Or for everybody?
Yeah. That's for everybody. Yeah, the free day.
Cool.
Yep.
That's very, very cool. And boy, we brought the kids and just had a blast.
Oh, that's great. Great.
Yeah, they were down there dressing up, doing the all
that's
kind
wonderful.
Of stuff, new fridge art. It's very fun. again, you can see these great exhibits. It is Ansel Adams' early works, Photo Secession, as well as Winter Light, all currently on display at the Hyde Collection, hydecollection.org, or go to our website, wamc.org/roundtable. Charles Guerin and Aaron Coe, thank you so much for your great work and for being with us this morning. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Delight. Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.